Today on Heavy Networking, we discuss the SONiC network operating system with our sponsor, Dell Technologies. SONiC is, quote, an open source network operating system based on Linux that runs on switches from multiple vendors and ASICs, close quote. Now, if an open source NAS sounds like something for, fancy hyperscale web companies who are a little special and kind of a little insane, think again. Dell has invested hugely in SONiC and believes it's now ready for all sorts of enterprises, very possibly yours. How ready? Ready enough that Dell will back SONiC with all the support you'd require to be comfortable deploying it. And in this show, we're going to dive into the details with Ali Hassan, Product Strategy and Business Development at Dell Technologies. Ali, welcome to Heavy Networking. And this is your first time. It's good to have you here, man. So I think the way for people to get to know you is for you just to tell them what SONiC is. I think a lot of folks on the show maybe have heard of it, maybe haven't. So we should start there. Give us a brief description of SONiC.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. It's an absolute pleasure and an honor to be here with the both of you. So SONiC is an open source network operating system contributed to OCP. The seed code for SONiC was provided by Microsoft. And over the years, there's been a large community of vendors and operators that have started supporting SONiC. And in the landscape of open source network operating system, SONiC is pretty much ahead of a lot of its competitors. Currently, it's deployed in Microsoft Azure at scale.
And that's key. There's two things that I take away from that. One is that SONiC is years in development. It's not 6 months old and suddenly it's to market.
Correct.
And the second one is that it's widely deployed in the cloud providers. That means that it's, you know, come out of a process where stability and predictability has been key, but that also means, and this is what we'll be talking about today, that it might not have the features that enterprises want, because what cloud companies to do is very different from what enterprises want, right?
Absolutely correct. You're stealing my thunder for the rest of the conversation, but you're absolutely correct on that one.
I get a chance to look a little intelligent. Come on.
Well, Ali, let's dig into that. I mean, why is SONiC interesting to the broader networking market? Because that's right. If you look at the things that come up on the first page of a Google search, it looks like it's all cloudy stuff. But in fact, there's a lot more there now that makes it interesting to a broader scale of enterprises. Tell us about that.
No, absolutely. As Greg mentioned, SONiC was created for the hyperscale environment, and that from an enterprise perspective, that has certain connotations associated with it. So, based on the hyperscale environment, traditional way of doing networking cannot work or scale. Just the environment is so large, doing a box by box configuration, trying to pull stats and telemetry data off of each box is just not scalable. I mean, you would need hundreds of thousands of people to manage an environment like that. So SONiC has been created for telemetry, automation, and scale, which enterprises can definitely take advantage of. Now, having said that, as Greg mentioned, there are features that are needed. There are a certain amount of handholding that might be required to bridge this world of enterprise networking with this hyperscale networking. So the perceived risk associated with an open source project running in a production enterprise environment gets taken away. And that is what Dell is doing. We are bridging those worlds of hyperscale networking and enterprise networking and giving those innovation, technology, efficiency, scale, economics over to the enterprise world.
Got it. So in other words, if I'm thinking about SONiC and I'm an enterprise, if the open source bit of it, if I was a huge company and had all kinds of operators and developers to throw at it, then maybe I would consider it doesn't such an open source project, kind of make it my own. But since I'm not that, maybe I, in the past, would have looked away from something like SONiC. But now, your point here, Ali, Dell is putting this package together. So you can buy a switch running SONiC backed by Dell, and it all of a sudden is a viable switching platform for me to be thinking about.
Absolutely correct, Ethan. I think that's exactly hitting the nail on the head. A lot of the enterprises do not have the scale and the logistics that are required to consume SONiC the way it is. And that is where our distribution of SONiC comes in to bridge that gap. So fair point.
Oh, okay, so another question then is, well, why you guys behind SONiC? What does Dell particularly know about SONiC one way or the other?
Well, we've been involved with the SONiC project right from its inception a few years ago. We're also the founding members of PSI, with Microsoft, which is a switch abstraction interface, which harmonizes all the SDKs from the different ASIC vendors. So our involvement with Sonic is not something which is new or we've just jumped in as an operating system du jour, but rather from its inception. Now, what we have done to continue this journey for Sonic into enterprise is that we have contributed code. There are about 2 million lines of code that have gone into Dell's distribution of Sonic. We make sure that the release of Sonic goes through thousands and thousands of tests. Cases and use cases to make sure that it is stable. And then, as it was mentioned, we are providing 24/7/4 mission critical support on Sonic, as well as deployment services for the customers.
And I think another point here, which you haven't perhaps with a little bit of humility, is you also haven't pointed out that Dell's actually got a long history of developing open source NOSes. You were involved in previous projects and you've turned to Sonic. Obviously, as part of, because the community's turning to it, you're actually backing what has become clearly a winner in terms of all the open source NOSes that are out there as well. But Dell does have a pedigree of, at least to my mind, 6 to 8 years of actually developing NOSes and having software teams allocated to the project. It's not like you've suddenly gone, hey, we'll get on the bandwagon. You've actually been doing this for a while.
Absolutely, and thank you for bringing that up. See, the way we look at the networking market, to us, it is very similar to the compute market of the 80s and the 90s, where you have vertically integrated stacks from certain providers. And just like in the compute market, first we had the x86 architecture come in, and then we had standardized operating systems like Windows and Linux coming in, which commoditized or democratized the entire compute industry. That is the journey that we've been pushing the industry towards for the last 6 years. So that was our initiative for the open networking. That was our initiative for OpenSwitch, OPX, and now basically we are pushing the industry towards the direction of Sonic. Yeah. As part of that journey.
Okay. Now, in the beginning, when we talked about Sonic, we mentioned cloud and hyperscalers, folks that were building those sorts of networks. But we're pitching to a much broader audience here. So we need to help them understand Sonic use cases. If they're not building, you know, the largest network in the world, but we're making the case that Sonic's still viable for them, what's that look like? Is it like a fit for the campus? Is it just for my data center? How does Sonic fit in potentially?
So the beauty of Sonic is it can almost be viewed as a framework over which we can put the building blocks that are needed. And that happens because of the scalable containerized architecture that Sonic has. So to specifically answer the question, initially we're starting, for the Dell distribution of Sonic, we're starting with data center environments, whether they're brownfield or greenfield data center. Now, because of the fact that Sonic actually lends itself to have the ability of running different kind of architectures, we are looking at different industry verticals. We are looking at different use cases. But as of now, we are focused from a crawl, walk, run strategy specifically on data centers.
Now, it also has to be said, this is the Sonic architecture. You're not strapping, you're not putting an alien on top of a hobby horse here. This is what Sonic was intended to be. Microsoft takes Sonic and builds a platform, and then it adds in the pieces that it wants to use. But Sonic is built as a, the idea behind Sci, which is the evolution of Sonic, is that it is actually a platform and it's designed to be modular and componentized and container-led so that you can start to bring apps on top. And that's how Microsoft set it up and the Open Compute Foundation, Open Compute Project, put it together, is so that other people can come and participate without overlapping each other.
That is absolutely correct. And from our perspective, we've stayed true to that mission. What we are also doing is that everything that we are developing specifically for the base Sonic, we either have contributed back to open source community or we have plans to do so. And it's just a mechanism that we're going through. So the idea is that not to take Sonic and convert it into something which is completely unrecognizable. The goal over here is to harness the power of this proven network operating system that we know scales, is built for automation, is built for telemetry, and add the features and the testing and the support that is needed for it to be successful in enterprise environments.
So this is important to actually park here for a minute, because when we think of a network operating system, a lot of times we as network engineers think of the monolithic thing that we've been consuming typically for the last 20 or even 30 years, where it's the thing that boots up and it runs on the switch or on the router, and it's got all these processes and services that run in there, all the routing protocols and related networking kind of things that we think of. And so we think of a NOS, we think of that stuff. But when we're talking about SONiC, yeah, we're talking about some of that stuff, like a BGP daemon perhaps, but we're really also talking about a software architecture, an architecture that allows you mentioned container-based a little bit ago, that allows you to run a variety of different applications on top of it potentially. You could kind of make it customized to what you need, and also lends itself very well to automation. You've got an interface there that you can programmatically configure this SONiC. And you can also deal with telemetry, where, again, SONiC is designed to give you a lot of data coming off the box. Allie, correct me here where I'm wrong or expand on this, but the big idea isn't merely it's another version of the monolithic thing you've run all these years. It's really something quite other that's new and modern.
I think what you're getting at, Ethan, is that it's not like some back 10 years ago in the Linux days and some big vendor would rush out and get a version of Linux and then strap their name onto it and then fork it and start doing all this stuff and turning it into a proprietary Linux. That's not what this is. You're literally just adding 20% to SONiC and then putting a support agreement so that enterprises can have that defense in depth for their network strategy. That's really where we're at.
No, absolutely. I think both of you have described, in my humble opinion, both of you have described the different phases of the evolution of where we're trying to take the industry, where we want our customers to move. And we believe that this is a natural evolution of the networking world. So from a perspective of, if I again go back to the compute architecture, switch is the server and SONiC is the Linux. On it. Yeah. So when you look at that monolithic architecture, it takes us back to the good old days of Digital and Sun and so on and so forth, where we had these monolithic architectures. If I wanted Solaris, it had to run on a Spark processor. And as that moved over to x86 and Linux, that's exactly the direction we are pushing the networking industry to, where you have a standardized merchant silicon, you have PSI, which abstracts the interfaces on that merchant silicon, and then you have SONiC sitting on top as an operating system.
Right. So we've got SONiC sitting on top. SONiC talks to PSI, the switch abstraction interface, and the switch abstraction interface talks to, as you said, merchant silicon down underneath, which gives us an ecosystem of hardware switches that we can run this on. And in the Dell world, Ali, we're talking about various Broadcom chipsets.
That is absolutely correct. Currently, our portfolio is based on the Broadcom Tomahawk and Trident chipsets, and we are looking at the DNX family for down the road for different specific use cases. But as of now, it's Tomahawk and Trident families.
Okay, so what we're saying here is standard merchant silicon, Broadcom chipsets, and Dell has a range of open networking switches, which this is going to run on, which makes sense. That's what I would expect. But let's get down into the features. So if I bought the Dell SONiC operating system, what am I going to get? What are the features that I need?
So you're going to get a complete set of L2 and L3 stacks. So you have the BGP, you have OSPF, you have flavor of spanning tree. From our perspective, to help the enterprise use cases and workloads, we've added multi-chassis lag. We've added BGP EVPN. We've started down the journey for the IPv6 as well. A couple of other things that we're adding. So based on the ways, since SONiC was created for complete automation, there are different ways of configuration into SONiC. So what we're doing is we're also creating a unified management framework, which allows for REST APIs as well as open config models and some CLI capability as well.
Yeah, I saw that. So you're actually building a CLI so that if you actually just want to do some I got the impression that the CLIs are still in an emerging sort of a phase. So you've started down the CLI for the people that want that, but you would sort of expect most people to be using open config or some sort of API-centric configuration? Or is it just an evolution, really?
That is correct. So the idea is, right, that the CLI is there for customers to do some troubleshooting, so on and so forth, and we will make sure that the CLI is comprehensive and covers all the use cases. Having said that, to truly unleash the power of what Sonic is bringing, the automation at scale, the telemetry at scale, we want to be in the environments to showcase that. And for that to happen, of course, that's where the REST configs and the open config model comes in.
Yeah.
So who in the Dell ecosystem, how would they be consuming this telemetry? Is there a model that they typically follow or something that Dell recommends that they use to consume the telemetry coming off of a Dell box that's running Sonic?
Sonic inherently has, for example, features like Everflow, which is used for flow tracking. We have Ping Mesh built in, which gives us a heat map. So those inherent capabilities are already existing in Sonic. But again, based on something Ethan, you and Greg pointed out earlier, based on the fact that this is open source, community has the code for Sonic, we have the ability to get together with other community members and start actually leveraging that power of open source of code development and coming together on for Sonic. So what we have done is that we are in the process and we have created an ecosystem of partners who excel at providing automation, who excel at providing diagnostic telemetry, so on and so forth. So Apstra is one partner specifically around automation and making sure that the day zero design aligns to, you know, day two config and making sure that things move forward. We have a startup by the name of Octera, which is using AI and ML to actually ingest all the different inputs coming in from the network and then not only do a reactive analysis on it, but also once the machine learning has kicked in, then start doing predictive analysis on the network and making sure that all the noise and the sound gets suppressed and only those messages and logs come into the operators that are of relevance. We also have a Broadcom's suite of telemetry in there with IFA and BST to provide deep ASIC level monitoring tools. So things like predicting grave failures or mirrors on drop.
Yeah, more information than we know what to do with. That's what you're telling me.
Exactly.
I guess that rolls into the partner ecosystem you're talking about, like Octera. Okay, you said AI, that's a new one. AI and ML. And so they're dealing with that huge data set that's coming off of the chips and making their own inferences as it trains and learns. And as you put it, Ali, we're getting to the point of only escalating alerts up to the operators that are, well, you didn't say actionable, but that's what I inferred, you know, actionable. That's the goal. That's what we're trying to get. Got it. So there's lots there that's coming off the boxes. Can I go back to something though about the architecture of Sonic a little bit that I think is also important, and that is this container thing. Now, what am I getting from Dell in your version of Sonic where I'm concerned about containers, or am I, or do I just look at here's my Dell switch running Sonic, and because there's containers, I can run other things on there that I want to? Is that a way to think about it, or is Dell just using the container architecture to, you know, load up a customized solution for me? How should I think about that?
It's generally both. We are using the containerized architecture to load up. The containerized architecture lends itself to things like, you know, hitless upgrades for the warm reboot and fast reboot and things like that. But beyond that, we are actually working with some customers where they are implementing their own containers on top of Sonic. And we are, of course, working with them and helping them with that. The two main use cases that I've come across is that integrating their tool chain to make sure that the data is provided to the systems and all the analytic engines that they have running in there. That is one use case.
So they're developing telemetry-style solutions in a container, picking up something like flow records and then munging them locally and exporting them all. Something like that?
Correct. Secondly, another very interesting use case is the zero-touch provisioning. But the provisioning of the entire rack. So think of a remote site, whether it is a tower or it is a retail site, and you've got to deploy thousands and thousands of them. The ability to actually ship a rack there, have someone connect three wires, and then stand back and the rack configures itself. That comes through this containerized architecture. We can take a third-party app, which can act as a local DHCP server, and it can run an agent and is holding the images and the configurations and so on and so forth. And once it boots up, it reaches out to the centralized manager, gives its unique identifier, and from there, everything from a perspective of if is the right image on the servers, is the right image on the switch, is the right configuration there. All of that process kickstarts based on that agent container that is running on top of Sonic.
So you're sort of talking there about a bare metal boot system or a distributed edge compute system where if you're going to put thousands of locations out there on the edge of the network, the only thing that has the configuration might be the switch to start with. And there's a container in there which calls home, has some crypto ready to go. And then all of a sudden you say, oh, yes, no, this deployment is at location 5,260. It's this format, and then the switches start to, they boot, and then they start to bare metal boot. They might cooperate with like smart NICs to set the root of trust, and then away it goes from there. That the sort of thing that some people are talking about?
So it is the edge bare metal automation use case, and Greg, you've described it a lot better than I have. So yes, absolutely. That is exactly what it is.
It's a really interesting niche that there, you know, if you need to do that, solving that problem is infinitely hard, and having a container on the switch solves a whole lot of problems about how do you boot the servers, how do you get the server, the BMC boards to pick up their root of trust, and so the NICs get to where they need to be. And actually doing it on the switch is not something that's often thought of because most of the developers are looking at it from a service perspective. And so it's important that networking people get in on those discussions and participate to show that the network can be to be part of this. I think there's also a bunch of stuff where there is certain monitoring that can be done in the switch to tell you if the servers are operational. So you could look at writing fairly simple scripts to just check heartbeats to the servers and check power cycles and PDUs. And the switch could be a point of check in an overall analytics platform to validate the state of your edge. And that's the value of the container in the operating system, I think.
It is, right? And I think that the thought process when we started down this journey, when we were having the conversation specifically around this use case, right, there were a couple of challenges and there were a couple of advantages. Every rack is going to have at least one switch. Either it's going to be a topper rack or a topper rack and the management switch. Now, how do we utilize those to actually make this use case a reality? That was the one piece. The second piece was, as you pointed out, you know, if you're planning on doing this on a server, and that's all the function of the server is, which, you know, a lot of times is the case. Now you're maintaining two separate SKUs of servers because you're not going to have that whole souped up, powered up server that's going to run your workloads. You're taking up another RU in an important real estate. So you're burning that one RU and you're maintaining separate SKUs, so on and so forth, increasing the complexity of things.
Yeah, you're not going to be mining cryptocurrency on this container. It's got a very specific limited power specific thing. And I think the other interesting angle here is the ability for telemetry or for running agents on the switches where people who might want to run Ansible locally for something and do some adaptive configuration. This was a use case that was a long time ago in the early days of SDN that sort of got lost along the way. Sometimes you want the switch to be able to do something dumb, but do it locally. It shouldn't have to reach out to a central controller to do things. And you might want to have a little agent there that's got like a little heartbeat or something. And that's the sort of use cases for these containers on Sonic that I can imagine. And I'm sure there's so many more, but they're just the ones that I think of. If you haven't thought about using containers on switches because it went through a fashion of being a part of the thing and then it went out of fashion. And I was sort of sad to see it go in a way.
So, Ali, I want to follow up with something you said a little bit earlier because I got all excited. Here's what I imagined in my mind is you put your wizard robes and your wizard hat on and your staff, and then you said this incantation, hitless upgrades. And I was like, oh, what does that really mean? And I know that's got to do something with the with our architecture that we've described here, where we've got containers and we've got a control plane that's running there. Then we've got the data plane, and there's some separation there that gives us some flexibility. Do we really mean hitless upgrades? That's kind of a big claim that very few actually deliver on. So I thought maybe we'd drill into that and just to understand exactly what's going on there.
Right. As part of the Community Sonic initiative, what Microsoft has put out there are two specific features called Warm Reboot and Fast Reboot. And one came after the other. And the way this works is that the fact that we do have a containerized architecture, we do have a separation of control plane and the data plane. The upgrade, for example, for BGP or the L3 stack or LLDP, that can happen while the data is still being sent out and there is no disruption. Now, when we do go back to the data plane, at that point, once that piece kicks in, at that point, there might be a few packet drops with retransmits and so on and so forth. So the downtime is very little to minimum.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
That makes sense, right? Because at the end of the day, you've only got one control plane in the switch. You've got one CPU, you've got one, and you've also got one ASIC doing all the forwarding. And in most eCMP infrastructures, you only want to be able to reload the control plane. You don't want to distress the data plane. So that's not operationally, that's not a bad thing. I can't see how that's necessarily a deal killer, if you know what I'm saying.
But it works well. I mean, I'll go back to the roots of the Sonic, where it is in Azure. Their requirements for uptimes are extremely stringent.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, the way the Sonic has been architected is to make sure that things stay up.
Yeah.
And this is part of that story.
I was thinking, if you've got an eCMP network set up in your data center, or you're heading in that direction in the campus, which it makes sense to me because a good eCMP is better than a chassis, in my mind, any day. You should be able to reboot any part of that eCMP and not impact. And so if you've got VXLANs and EVPNs running in there and you've got that type of technology in there, you shouldn't actually have too much of a problem. If you're implementing some of the heritage protocols, if you're using MLAG or, you know, some of the older spanning tree type stuff, maybe that's a different game, and the limitations there aren't due to the switch itself. It's due to the protocols and the servers inside it. You know, that's just the way those protocols, they've got their limitations. So I don't see that as a deal breaker necessarily.
Right. Of course, you know, the question we started focusing specifically on one box and how Sonic behaves. Once you integrate that into an architecture and something like an eCMP agreed, right? Mm. Then the architecture and the redundancy and the resiliency of the architecture kicks in, where the traffic reroutes and moves forward that way, you know, making sure that things continue to stay up.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I have mixed feelings about chassis. I think that chassis in the average enterprise no longer needed. We can now predict a line of physical switches. We know that Broadcom has published their roadmap. You can now go from 25 gig to 50 gig to 100 gig to 400 gig in your data center today. So why would you want a chassis unless you're getting bigger than sort of 8 to 10,000 ports at the leaf node of an eCMP spine, right? Because it's the only time you need them is if you need to condense a lot in the spine layer. You're not going to need a chassis at the edge of the network, because if you connect 20 servers at 50 gigs, that's the capacity that you want. You don't want to have too many servers connected to a single switch, because it becomes a single point of failure. It makes more sense to distribute them across many switches so that you don't have control. The weakness of a chassis has always been blast radius. Now, the only place where chassis make sense is in the spine now in an eCMP, so that you can have a very wide leaf. So the leaf layer can be hundreds and hundreds of switches wide, and that keeps that whole sprawl under control. Well,
yes, we could argue three-stage versus five-stage cloth fabric, but I guess
this is why I'm sort of I don't believe that chassis have a future. So I'm perfectly okay with Dell pursuing a strategy of, we're going to support 400 gig, you know, 32 ports of 400 gig in an eCMP spine. Well, that's more than most enterprises have barely gotten to 10 gig, not even 25 gig or 50 gig or 100 gig to the server. And in a funny sort of a way, you actually don't, a typical enterprise only wants to put 20 VMs per server, because if the server flames out, losing 20 VMs is kind of a bad thing, right? So you actually don't want a lot of vertical scale. In some cases, you want horizontal scale, so you don't actually want big hot and heavy switches. So I'm less concerned about that. What I am more interested in is how the routing protocols are conventional. So I believe that you're using fairly standard routing suite and a fairly standard switching suite.
Correct. So when we were actually going through this, you know, we were taking a look at the different options available. And we also wanted to make sure that we don't end up with a proprietary routing suite. We wanted to be able to make sure that the community aspect of the innovation continues. So from that perspective, we had a couple of options. We had the option of going with the native Quagga that was on there or FRR. And for various different reasons, we've gone with FRR. We have made contributions, and we continue to contribute towards the FRR side of things. But standard BGP, standard OSPF, standard L2 suite. Absolutely correct.
Yes, I think we might know what some of those reasons are that you went with FRR. So not exactly shocking that you went that direction. Although for folks that are thinking that, it's like, oh, okay, so I get this switch and it's running OSPF basically, you know, via FRR, and they're going, so I would configure that, and they're thinking down that road. Well, let's back out for a second, because we were talking about centralized management earlier, and you mentioned Apstra as someone in your partner ecosystem, for example. And we know Apstra, they've been a sponsor on Packet Pushers in the past and have talked a bit about what they do with intent-based networking and so on. So would you anticipate that a customer is going to be using Apstra or some other kind of centralized SDN style controller to build out and stand up a rack and have all of these different switches kind of managed as a whole, as opposed to, I'm going to log into this one and then put IP addresses on it, then stand up the routing protocol and then applaud? What's the normal paradigm here with Sonic?
It's never an either or, right? It's a continuum. There are going to be some customers who are going to need someone like an Apstra with an SDN controller to help push down the config, get some analytics out of it, use it to maintain the network. There are going to be other customers who are further along, perhaps, or on their DevOps journey, have an affinity towards scripting, and they will be using Ansible and will have some sort of an analytics engine for telemetry. And finally, and depending on the size of the deployment, there are going to be customers who would want the CLI piece of it. Mm-hmm. So on that continuum, we are going to have customers in different places in their journey towards the DevOps. And what we are doing with Sonic is specifically making sure that our customers have the ability to do so regardless of where they are on that journey. And that's where the options come in.
And lo, Ali did put on his wizard hat again and said this spell, Ansible. So, okay. I don't think we've said Ansible before on the show. So if Ansible is part of the equation here, tell us, what magic can I do with Ansible as related to Sonic and Adele Switch?
We are basically putting out Ansible playbooks with you know, pre-configured templates and things like that, where the customer can just go ahead and populate. It's part of the DevOps automation suite. In fact, it was the first automation from our perspective that we started looking at. So that whole support is there. We are publishing the playbooks. They're all going to be put out there for customers to use.
So, Ali, you guys are publishing playbooks and so on. Is that like part of a GitHub repository? Where do I go and get that information if I'm an Ansible user?
We are publishing them on the Ansible Galaxy as well as on the Dell site as well. And we will have it as part of the Sonic GitHub.
And those playbooks are letting me do things like, I need to stand up a Leaf spy network and it's pushing, you know, IPs in for me and some route protocol configuration, that sort of thing?
I need to bring up a Leaf spy network with X number of spines and X number of leaves. These are the IP addresses. These are the management addresses. Maybe we're using BGP unnumbered. These are the interface configurations. These are the neighbors, all of that. Can be done, and that's the power of Ansible, right? We cannot take credit for that from a Sonic perspective, but all available at a click of a button.
Lovely, got it. This actually leads me to another thought here. When I was digging in on Sonic, one of the points that was made along the way was, hey, when you have Sonic, it's not just about the network operating system and pushing packets forward. Think about it from a DevOps perspective, the dev in DevOps. That is, you could engage developers to get the switching involved in that development process. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, as the industry moves towards the DevOps environment, the line between networking and compute is blurring, right? So all the tools that were used to deploy servers at scale, you know, those have started to bleed in towards the networking side of things. And now, with the fact that Sonic is based on Debian, Linux, developers start to play a much more important role. They have a lot more flexibility on things that they can do from a network automation perspective, as well as even network management and so on and so forth. So again, this is part of that journey, that evolution where the lines between the compute world and the network world is blurred.
Yeah, it's super interesting to me that the way that Sonic supports disaggregated apps, so it's this idea of the container model is disaggregation. You can choose what software you run too, right? The Dell Sonic distribution is going to be, give me a form of Sonic that I can consume, and also importantly, so that you can support it, so you can build a support team that supports the Sonic that you get from Dell. But I think the other aspect of this is that I can still go in there and do the programmability, that I can build something to run on Sonic if I so choose. And that is a strategic choice that has a 10-year horizon to my mind. Because what Dell's asking customers to do with Sonic is commit to something that's going to be a 5 to 10 year. If you commit to a network operating system, generally you're not committing to the hardware because the hardware can change over time. Generally, you want to have openness so that you can plan a long-term partnership because you're going to write code against the NOS. So having something like Sonic is a bit like the success that Linux had in the server. It may not be the same Linux everywhere, but it's fundamentally close enough that you can actually build a long-term strategy around it compared to the other choices. So I think that is a real key part of this, is that developers and NetOps and DevOps and DevSecOps or whatever it's called this week actually can build a long-term strategy around this Sonic, as opposed to some custom NOS where this week the API is called this and next week it's called that sort of thing.
Right. And from an organization's perspective, then the investments start going into the people, into the processes, where, to your point, this investment will continue to pay off for a very long time horizon, as opposed to making the investments into boxed hardware or vertically integrated software and things like that, where if the business strategy changes, a lot of that investment can be lost. Because now you have a new vendor coming in.
Yeah. Well, I've heard stories of the mega clouds, you know, like saying they have the ability to do all of this programming in-house. And if they have a critical problem, they pull out the source code of the switch and start looking for where the bug is. Now, not every enterprise needs that, but some of us will. There are some enterprises doubling down on their in-house skills. And that ability to say, well, I'm using Dell Sonic today, but I need a fix in 6 weeks. I can't wait. Or I need a fix tonight. You know, maybe what I do is still use Sonic, but I do something that with the open source version to get me through my problem for a period of time. There's so many more choices this way, instead of depending on a third party to do it all for you, while still getting the backup of what a big company like Dell can give me, because you've got this team of people behind it.
Well, with our offering, I mean, you have best of both the worlds, right? Mm. To your point, you can always... or best of all the three worlds, I suppose, would be the way to put it. You can do it yourself, you can reach out to the community, and you have Dell as your safety net, and we will go in and we will do it regardless. So that way, it allows for customers to have multiple levels of protection, as opposed to just sitting and waiting for a vendor to respond if they have the skill set to do those things in-house.
Well, Ali, this has been a fantastic conversation about Dell, what you guys are doing with Sonic, how the Sonic operating system works, why I would consider it, how it affects my operations, et cetera. So give us some parting thoughts here. Maybe, I know there's going to be some people that are thinking, again, Sonic, they know it's open source and it's advanced a lot, and maybe they're still asking the question, why Dell specifically? You got some thoughts for them.
It's a two-part response, right? From a Sonic perspective, based on announcements that have come out from multiple different vendors in the industry in the last couple of months, we know Sonic is the right vehicle for the networking industry moving forward. It is the future, as more and more tailwinds and support continue to stand behind Sonic and move it forward. Having said that, from a Dell perspective, now this is the second part of the question, they have, from a Dell perspective, we have gone a bit further than what a lot of the other folks in the industry are doing. We have created our own distribution of Sonic, which allows us to provide that 24/7/4 mission critical support around the globe to all enterprise customers. It allows us to ensure that we harden, we find the bugs, we fix the bugs, we add the features before we make the release. And that truly is the distinguishing factor in the direction that we are going. Our investments into Sonic are much deeper than what a lot of the other folks are doing.
I think it's important to understand here that, into my mind, and this is just my perspective on Sonic, I think Sonic is building up perhaps a market-winning momentum here as the single open-source NOS. There are many others in the market today, and we know that even from Linux, even though there's various flavors of Linux, Linux is the operating system that's gone on to dominate much of the server world, and I think in the end will dominate the switching world over time. And that's a long horizon. That's, you know, 5, 10, 20 years. And the choice that you're going to be making in the future is which version of Sonic do you want to use? And would you agree with that?
Agreed. Sonic is a distribution. It is definitely not a fork. We are part of the community. We continue to contribute to the community. We are, from a Dell perspective, one of the top contributors to the community. And we expect that role to increase further with our involvement and the investments that we're making into Sonic to make sure that the entire community benefits from what we're doing.
Yeah. So I sort of envision this as a very loose metaphor that we have Dell's Sonic distribution, in the same way that there is Red Hat and there's a SUSE and there's a Debian, and there'll be different versions of this. And I think my point would be is that Sonic is poised to be, and there's still some evolution to happen here, to be that core that other people then add value to over time. And it's not that and Red Hat and these aren't forks. These are coherent linear strategies that you can bet your business on. And that's been proven out in the Linux business models over the last 10 years.
Agreed. And then that is the third leg of the stool where, Switch is the server, Sonic becomes the Linux, and these distributions come in to do exactly what you said from a perspective of a SUSE and a Red Hat.
Yeah, and I bring that out because if you're a senior engineer looking at a networking strategy, the thing that might hold you back is, you know, you're saying, well, where's the long term? Where's my 5-year, 10-year commitment here? And I think that's the statement I would make to people is, if you're considering it, think about it in that framework, not so much of another. Because keep in mind, you could shift distributions in the future if that's what's necessary, and that could help you de-risk that decision making.
From a Dell perspective, we are all about providing customer the choice. That is what our open networking strategy is based on. And the continuation of that open networking strategy with open source networking with Sonic is part of that.
Yeah, for sure.
That we will win based on technology, based on service offerings, etc., without ever locking the customer in.
Well, if folks want to find out more, Ali, where would you send them? I guess... Dell.com would be the thing to go. Are there other recommendations that you want to make?
Absolutely. So there is a open source Sonic GitHub page that is there. Apart from that, on Dell.com, we have a specific Sonic page created that can help customers and operators and people who are just curious as to what is going on. And we can put that as part of the footnote.
Yeah, we will. Podcast. We will put that into the show notes because the URL, I'm afraid, dear listener, is too long for you to remember as you're driving to work or however you are consuming this right now. So go to packetpushers.net, find this show in the Heavy Networking channel on Dell and Sonic, and we'll have a whole bunch of links in there for you so you can dig in and find out more on this topic. Thank you, Ali, for joining us today, and our thanks to Dell Technologies for sponsoring sponsoring heavy networking today. Without our sponsors, this whole podcast, I think it just does not work as well as it does for us without those sponsors. So if you ring up Dell to dig into Sonic, into the Dell open networking ecosystem, just let them know that you heard about them on the Packet Pushers podcast network. We would really appreciate that. You can find this and many more fine pre-technical podcasts, along with our community blog. All of that is at packetpushers.net. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Packet Pushers, and we're on LinkedIn, et cetera, et cetera. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.